Hey, it's Karam.
And it's Sonelli.
On Brown Girls Talk Dirty, the podcast about brown girls and their experiences with dating and sex. This week, we have Daman, my bestest friend. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Daman. I'm 30. I identify as Punjabi Sikh. I grew up in Brampton, which is a suburb outside of Toronto, huge South Asian community. And I live and work in downtown Toronto in marketing.
Dee, can you please tell us about your first experiences with dating?
Yeah, actually, I was probably in my mid-20s when I started kind of going on the apps, which is really late, comparatively. I didn't really date in high school at all, and that actually was super connected to my self-confidence. It wasn't like I was waiting for something. It just was, my comfort level wasn't there. So I'd say when I finally moved back to Toronto with my sister in my mid-20s, I was on like Tinder and OkCupid, and I didn't really know what I was looking for. I just kind of created a generic profile, and I think I just wanted to like talk to guys, because that was something I didn't have a lot of experience with. And I dated a lot of losers because I didn't think I deserved to date like, you know, super attractive, super successful men.
And this was when you were 20?
In my 20s. I was probably 24, 25.
Was it fear going into dating through apps?
Was I scared?
Was it fear, yeah.
It was actually, I think, more comfortable than meeting someone and talking to a boy face-to-face, because there was kind of that distance, right, with the app where you can just kind of text and there's some anonymity there,
right,
which I really, like, it was super comfortable for me. I definitely, like, had crushes on guys in high school, but I just ignored them and pretended they didn't exist, and that was how I dealt with my attraction to guys growing up. So apps made that a lot easier for me. But then again, I would fall into that trap of just texting a guy for, like, weeks on end. And then when I actually meet them, I'd realize there was zero connection. So it's been kind of like a learning curve for me, figuring out, like, you know, trusting my gut. Like, if I kind of get a weird sense from a guy from the get-go in person, that's probably going to translate a lot stronger. I actually really can't remember a lot of my first few dates when I started. And that's why the first few dates I had using Tinder and OkCupid, they were total crap, because I was going for guys that I thought, I was looking for brown guys specifically because I was trying to please my parents.
Yep.
I wasn't thinking about what I was actually attracted to, because I didn't really know. I never really thought about it. And I always just kind of went into it thinking about, like, okay, how do I please my mom and dad? How do I, like, earn their acceptance? You know, this is what a good brown girl is supposed to do. And that was kind of the road I was taking, which is why I went on these horrible dates with these guys that, again.
So I have a question. I don't know much about Sikh. The Sikh is it's a religion,
yes,
right?
Sikhism.
I don't know much about Sikhism. Is the religion strict where you have to marry within the Sikh community as well? Are they very strict about that?
If you're a baptized Sikh, I feel like there is more pressure to kind of also marry a Sikh, but Sikhism is also very open as a religion. Like, you know, you don't have to be born into Sikhism to go to our temple to pray with other Sikhs. So in a lot of ways, it's a very modern religion. But I think it was, like, my family isn't particularly religious. It's more like a cultural expectation that, like, I marry an Indian, preferably a Sikh or a Hindu. And there's that horrible analogy everyone uses, right? Like, no BMWs. Do you know what that stands for?
Black
Muslims or white.
Wow. Yeah. I've never heard this.
Yeah, so my parents would tell me that growing up, like, no BMWs. So that was, it was kind of like, okay, if I dated a black guy, a Muslim guy, or a white guy, that was like a big no-no.
So can a Sikh person marry a Punjabi person who's not Sikh? Because they're Hindu Punjabis, correct?
Hindu Punjabi, yeah. That my parents were totally cool with.
Okay.
Yeah.
But would it matter what you practice? Because
I think if they were Hindu or Sikh, my parents would be happy. Anything else was like questionable.
Like Muslim or Jewish or Christian or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so thank you for sharing that, because sometimes I always get confused sometimes what the difference is essentially. I don't really know why we create these differences to begin with. But that's a different topic.
Yeah, it's just like they, I guess, pray to different gods. So they're like, okay.
But I'm kind of jealous that they even let you choose like another religion that's okay, like Hindu or Sikhism.
Yeah.
For me, like if my parents were like Muslim or Zoroastrian, I was like, done. I will go find me a Zoroastrian or some like random ass shit because they've opened the pool up a little bit.
So going back to dating. So you jump on this app in your mid-20s, you're dating guys, obviously. And I mean, it's expected. You're not going to know what you want. You have to kind of like filter through to kind of learn the process, right?
Now I'm a pro. If you give me a phone, I will know in 2 seconds.
It's true. That's swiped amazing. For me and I was like, you don't even see their faces. It's so quick.
I was like, trust me.
Speed racer.
So are your parents okay with you dating? What's the expectation in terms of dating?
My dad is pretty far removed from my dating life. I don't talk about it with him. When I turned 30 in March, so just like over a month ago, he said, you know, you're getting older, you should settle down. That's as far as he'll go. You know, he's like, are you looking? And I'm like, yes, I'm looking. And that's all he needs to know. But with my mom, I'd say in the last 2 years, she's actually become super supportive about me dating and finding someone that I actually really like. And also just dating outside of my religion. So my older sister, she's just a year and a half older than me, but she's married to a British guy named Paul. Now she moved to the UK and they live together. So I think that was huge for my parents to see that, like, okay, like, our daughters can be happy and they don't have to marry a Sikh and they can be, like, comfortable and in a committed relationship. So I think that really opened their eyes a lot. So my mom also now will just kind of ask for updates. And she does know that the boy that I'm dating right now is Muslim.
I was going to say, is he a BMW?
He is.
Okay.
I refused to tell my dad, but he accidentally kind of found out one weekend when I was just, I guess, so the guy that I'm dating now is in India. He was there for 3 months and I just kind of asked about a certain region in India because he was staying there. And my dad was like, why do you want to know?
CSI India.
Yeah. And I was like, my friend's just traveling India. You know, I was wondering about this region and he's like, boy or girl. And I was like,
no,
I was like, it's a... And my mom started laughing, and he just knew immediately that there was a reason why I was asking this question. He asked what his name was, and I didn't want to tell my dad because he would know immediately. His name's Adnan, and so when I said his name, my dad just got really, really quiet.
Because it's a Muslim name.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he just said, I don't want you to pursue this. That was all he said. I ignored it. I mean, I think with my dad, I kind of just like laugh off those kinds of things that he tries to throw on me. Like, you know, you're getting old, you need to get married, or you should buy property in Toronto, which is, like, so far-fetched from reality. Mm-hmm. But with my mom, I had a really, really honest conversation with her where I said, if you want to be involved in my life and you want to know who I'm dating, then you need to be accepting of the fact that, like, I'm dating this guy. I don't care if he's Muslim. You've kind of been involved in my dating life for 2 years now, and you know how hard it is to connect with somebody. I'm not going to throw that away just because of his religion.
And she's cool with that.
And she thought about it for a while and said, like, okay, yeah, like, I want you to tell me what's happening. I want to be a part of your life. So, again, that's just been huge because
And what's your dad's update on this? Is he updated?
I think maybe through my mom, but she's not telling me.
Because she knows. What does she think would happen if
she just doesn't want to get my dad upset, I think. She just wants to keep the peace. My mom's goal at the end of the day is to make sure that, like, we all get along, which is,
you know, impossible. That is so interesting because I think generally in brown households, there's a lot of management that happens from the woman's side. Like, we want to manage that the father is okay so the house is not disrupted, because it almost seems like the household's emotion is run off the man's emotion. If he comes home upset, we were all warned, you know, dad's in a bad mood, play cool. So you'd have to go down and they have to put up this act and be like, hey pa, how was your day? And meanwhile, I could be feeling like shit, but you cannot put that forward.
I saw my mom, like, putting aside her feelings and her emotions to take care of the men in my family. And I think entering kind of adulthood and trying to date, I always put men's feelings ahead of my own. To my detriment, where I didn't realize, I was like, okay, he wants to have sex, or like, he wants to meet me now. Even if I didn't feel like it, or I actually was, like, stressed out, I was dealing with my own shit, I felt like I had to be accommodating to men.
Right.
And that's been so hard to break.
Yeah.
But has it been evolving, do you think?
I think so. I think especially this past year, I think it's been a combination of me living away from my family, setting boundaries, having this independence and autonomy. Also, my relationships at work, I think those also impact, like, my self-confidence and my ability to kind of stand up for myself. I just recently started seeing a therapist. I think it's, like, those three factors have played a huge role in me realizing my feelings matter and that I don't want to take care of somebody. I don't want to be in a codependent relationship like my mom and dad are, where he is so reliant on her cooking for him, cleaning, just, like, being at his available, like, whenever he needs something. I don't want that. I want autonomy, and I want independence, and I don't want to, like, play a role in someone's life, you know?
You don't want a project.
Yes, and I've dated guys like that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's so interesting you're saying that, you know, but it just takes me back home, you know, like, you sharing this, I'm almost like, oh my God, I get it, because I used to do that.
You know, I find this thing incredible because here we are, we're three brown women sitting around a table. One's Hindu, one's Sikh, one's Muslim, and this is a topic that we all completely understand. And I think it's just something within all our cultures where it's the norm for women to take on this emotional labor, and that onus or that burden is put on us to not only regulate the people in our family, but regulate the household, regulate the emotions, everything. And I'm just like, I don't know how one can manage all that. Is it possible? Is it just a perception? And then something we talked about in our last episode is, how do you unlearn the damaging parts of that? As you were saying, Dee, you feel like you're in that process.
Yeah, definitely. I started seeing a cognitive behavioral therapist this year. I knew I needed to see a therapist because I've definitely dealt with depression during university and throughout high school. And again, I'm sure you guys have talked about the fact that mental health in South Asian communities is kind of a taboo topic.
A bit, but, like, feel free to elaborate because I think that's so important.
Yeah, where I think I remember instances of me telling my mom when I was growing up that I was really unhappy, that I didn't like myself, and her feedback was, and again, there's no judgment now because mm-hmm. I know that she didn't know how to deal with kind of the situation that I was going through.
And it was probably internalized.
She didn't know how to
help.
Yeah, completely. But she just said, you know, just be happy.
I think that's even better than what I got, which was people like that are weak. Like, people who are using medication for depression, those are weak people.
One is weak. One is change how you feel, is essentially what them and your mom was saying, and your parents were saying you're weak. Mm-hmm. Back home, so in Nigeria, growing up, I don't think I ever came across the term depression, or I wasn't aware of it. And it's so funny because even right now, as I say this, I'm aware of mental health issues, but I know within my Nigerian friend community or my, you know, my family, we joke about it in the sense where we'll say, over here, everyone has ADD or everyone's depressed. Back home, we would just beat them. You're mad. You're not depressed. Do your work. I will beat you.
That's a great accent.
And so we would find, so when sometimes we joke about it, and not like beat to hurt, but just like a term used to say discipline them. You know, like if we discipline the child, all the depression and ADD will, you know, go out the window.
You just beat it out of them.
Yeah. You know, so there was no such thing. And there was no such thing as expression of your emotions because you're not allowed to feel that way. Like you said, it's like, change it.
Yeah, it was just kind of like suffocating those emotions, right? Like, there was no outlet at all. So I've known for a few years that I've needed to seek help from a therapist. At U of T, so I met Karam at the University of Toronto.
During our undergrad degree.
Yeah, and there was a counseling service that they had. It was garbage. It was total garbage.
It had the longest wait list.
Yeah, crazy long wait list. The woman that I was seeing didn't understand my cultural background and was just blaming my parents for everything. And that's, I think, also gave me like a really bad impression of therapy just because this woman didn't get it. And her solution was like, well, move away. And I was like, I can't. They're my family.
Yeah.
That's not a strategy. But anyway, I feel like I finally, through my naturopath, she was like, hey, like, we have a great therapist in our clinic. Just, you know, meet with her. I think I rescheduled that appointment like 10 times because I was so nervous. But I'd say the first few sessions, man, I like cried so much, but it felt so good. And she asked me questions about myself that I think a lot of people take for granted. Like, you know, like, what do you value? I don't know what I value. I've never had to think about these kinds of things. Because I think growing up, I really just tried to emulate what my parents wanted and completely kind of just lost my sense of self. And I'm trying to now figure out, okay, in relationships, what do I look for? What do I value? What do I want to bring to a relationship? I felt like really, really insecure when I was dating because I was like, oh, I should already have had sex. I should have already had like 3-4 long-term boyfriends. And I needed to stop saying like, I should. It's just like, I am, and this is going to be me going forward.
What was the pivotal point in that where you realized that I need to change from I should to I am?
I dated one guy, I think, specifically, who made me realize that I need to stop apologizing for my life experiences. He was a bit older than me. I think he was like 34, 35, and he was white.
Oh, I'm shocked right now.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm completely shocked that they're going to say it's a brown guy.
Oh, no. I think
a white
guy
taught you value. Okay.
No, he didn't teach me the value. He taught me. He made me realize.
Okay, yes.
He made me realize something. Anyway, he was. I feel like there were a ton of red flags. He only ever dated women of color, specifically
it's
brown
like a
girls.
Fetish.
I think he was a bit of a fetish. Because I asked him about his dating history, and then I was like, okay, after 3, I think there's like kind of a pattern that I'm noticing. I also kind of had like a white boy fetish for a while growing
okay.
up.
Okay.
I mean, like, I kind of grew up hating being I had a lot of self-hate being a brown person growing up in Brampton because we were the majority. And then like the little white minority that existed in my high school would always kind of talk about how brown people were taking over the city.
Oh my God.
Yeah, just like really, really racist, fucked up shit. So I definitely grew up kind of being like, oh, I'd love to date like a white boy who's in a band and, you know.
Like the stereotype, the white boy stereotype.
Yeah, the indie rock stereotype. So he totally like checked off those boxes. My impression of him was that like, okay, he understands where I'm coming from culturally. And he wasn't judgmental when I mentioned that like, I was really new to dating still. Like I hadn't had any long-term relationships. He seemed okay with that. But then when we started becoming more intimate and kind of sex got involved, I saw the judgment. He would say things like, you know, I can't believe you lost so many years, that you didn't date for so many years, that you didn't have sex for so many years. He couldn't believe it. And it almost made him uncomfortable.
And to be clear, what age were you when you lost your virginity, if you don't mind me asking?
28.
Okay, and you had dated him like a year after this? Like, after you lost your virginity?
I was 29, yeah.
Okay, and he was just saying, basically, look at this lost time.
Yeah, and he was upset that I didn't see myself the way that he saw me. He was almost angry about it.
And not in a sweet way. But
no.
It just made you feel like shit about yourself.
Yeah, and it was really, really hard to communicate that, hey, there's all these cultural factors that kind of played a role, that this wasn't a choice that I made. This was just kind of my upbringing and my experience. And I'm not going to apologize for it. But again, I felt so much shame. And I really wanted his approval. His validation. And so I really kind of just... I don't even know what made me realize it.
I think... sorry for jumping in, but just because I know the story so well.
Yeah.
I think you told me this was just at the part in your therapy when she gave you your value list of things you would value about yourself.
Right, yes.
Or it was just when you were having your beginning therapy sessions and you had told her about him. And
yeah.
I think you had that validation from authority or someone you respected to be like, whoa, this is actually fucked up.
Yeah, actually, okay, so there were a few instances when we would sleep together and he would ask me to do things that I was uncomfortable with and he would get upset or just stop in the middle and just be super judgmental. And that actually was scary. Because he was bigger than me. He was older than me. And I was actually afraid sometimes of him. And I don't think I let myself realize that until after. I would be tiptoeing around my apartment to make sure that I didn't wake him up. It was really messed up.
Honey.
And I wasn't getting anything from that relationship. It wasn't fulfilling at all. And I think when I did that a values exercise with my therapist, I realized that I let him walk all over me. I let him make me feel like crap in my own house, in my own apartment, in my own bed. And it was, I was just upset that I didn't see that. And I just cut it off with him, and I sent him a message, because I think what I used to do with men would be, I would just kind of let them disappear from my life, and I wouldn't tell them how they hurt me. And I realized that was actually kind of messing with me a bit, because I never had a release, I never had closure. And so with this guy, I did send him a message saying, hey, you made me feel like this. It was not okay. I just need to let you know that you're a piece of shit. And that, like, I never want to talk to you again.
And I think what was important here, and thank you so much for sharing that, Dee, you said this one sentence to him, which was, I never felt safe with you.
He was very emotionally manipulative, and I think that was part of his charm. And again, it was a learning experience. And I'm happy that I called him out on that, because I felt so much better after I did, and I've stopped thinking about him since. So I think it was really healthy for me to have that exchange, even though he didn't respond. Because I think the whole time I was thinking, like, okay, what if I say this and he responds like this way? And my therapist was kind of like, don't worry about the outcome. You just need to kind of have this for your own yeah. sake. You need to let him know.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very brave of you, I have to say.
Do you need, like, a tissue or water, you think it would be?
That takes a lot of courage to share how you feel.
Sorry.
It's almost like...
No, don't be sorry. Awesome.
The whole point is, you know, doing this is... It's therapeutic for us, and we hope it's therapeutic for people. Or people just don't feel alone. How did you come out of that and be okay with dating again?
I don't think I was open to really trying again. Like, I was on the apps, but I wasn't using them. I think I usually, when I have a bad experience dating, I'll take a break. But with the guy that I'm seeing right now, it's a really, really long story. But it was someone that I knew from 2 years ago. And we kind of just ran into each other. And I think it was that familiarity that was there. I knew he was a good person. And I was willing to kind of, like, take baby steps and see if it would turn out to be anything. I think what I realized out of that relationship was that I wanted to date someone from who was kind of just more culturally aware. And he didn't have to be Sikh, but I think I just felt more comfortable with brown men. And I think that's what I realized after I dated that piece of shit. that, like, there was just this familiarity that you have and this ease of experience. And I wouldn't have to defend kind of my life experiences because I think if I dated a person from just a South Asian in general.
You know what's crazy about that? Because when I was seeing the Saudi guy, I had assumed the same thing, but it wasn't like that at all. Like, I could feel the judgment basically of some of my life experiences and the lack of understanding. And I'm just like, holy crap, it's actually much more rare than you think. Like, yes, I'm still trying to figure out if I'm subconsciously seeking Arabic men because I know my parents will approve of it, and that's, like, what's the path of least resistance, or if I'm actually seeking that because that's what I like and I appreciate someone who comes from my culture and understands it. I think, as seen from your experiences in the past where you've dated other brown men, he is different. It's not just because of common cultural background, right?
That's actually a very good point. Yeah. I think there is that ease there, but then again, I've dated lots of lame brown dudes as well. I think it is, it's important for whoever I'm dating to have grown up around women. I think that, like, just, they just seem more with it, you know? And he's I guess the Western aspect matters a lot. Like, I think I have dated a few guys who maybe grew up in India, And it was just like a disconnect that was there. So growing up in Canada as well, I think is important for me. Not saying that, you know, that is across the board. But yeah, actually, I didn't think about that. I don't know. There's no clear answer.
Yeah, and there doesn't have to be, but I just, it's because I'm thinking it through because your experiences are so similar to my experiences. Because you're basically my twin in life. And so you're literally just making me think through that. And I'm like, the background is like, could be important, but it's not the only reason as to why things seem to be working out right now. And so this is actually going to take me to my next question, which is about sex and your experiences with it, only if you're comfortable talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, so I lost it when I was 28.
Damn it.
2 months before I turned 29. So okay. It was January.
Was it a decision you had to make to lose your virginity?
My best friend I grew up with, we grew up in the same hometown, went to school together, and she was like my twin in terms of like dating experiences growing up, right? Like we didn't talk to boys in Brampton, then we went to school, and then we were like, oh, they're cute, but we don't know how to date. But anyway, she lost her virginity before me, and I was just like dumbstruck. She told me she had sex, and I was like, what? Because I had dated probably like 2 years more than she did. And I was just shocked that she just had sex. Because in my mind, it was this, like, giant, I don't know, it was just, like,
mountain of doom.
Yeah, like, it was just something I would never reach, you know? That
oh, okay, something
kind of
more
in
positive,
my mind.
The candy mountain in the distance, okay.
But it was just, it just seemed so out of the way for me and just insurmountable. And I was like, what do you mean you just had sex? She's like, I just had it last night. And I was like, how? And I think she said something to me that kind of changed the way I thought about sex. And she said, dummin, she's like, because she knew I was kind of insecure about my body. And I think that was a huge reason why I waited so long to have sex, was because I was like, oh, I'm not like hot enough. Like I need to lose like 20 more pounds and then I can have sex. Like I literally had like a formula in my head.
Me too, girl.
I'm like, I have to look like this and then I can have sex. Okay. And she was just like, dummin, she's like, guys don't fucking care what you look like. They just, like, are turned on. It's like a naked girl in bed beside them.
Perpetually turned on.
And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, dude, like, he just, like, had a boner right away. And I was like, oh, my God. And so that actually totally took the pressure off. And I think maybe 2 months after she told me that story, I had sex. And it was with a guy who I felt really, really safe with, who also was just, like, he worked with, you know, on, like, LGBTQ trans issues, and so he was just a lot smarter, and he was just, you know...
He was woke.
He was woke.
And he was brown.
I felt really, really comfortable with him, and I was very upfront from the beginning that, like, hey, I'm a virgin, by the way, because I wanted to make sure that whoever I slept with knew that.
I think that's a big deal, because from my experience, when you say you're a virgin, they're kind of shocked and then almost turned off by it, because then they think... Well, fuck, I'm taking on this pressure and burden of, like, de-virginating you. And what if you suddenly become, like, completely obsessed with me and become my stalker?
Thankfully, he was, like, he wasn't like that at all. And I actually did date a guy right before him who, he was just really gross about it. I didn't want to have sex with him because he was just, like, he really wanted to, like, take my virginity. He, like, romanticized it. And
he
wanted
to deflower you.
Yeah, it was disgusting. It was so gross. He was really turned on by the fact that, like, I was a virgin. And I was like, cool, this is creepy. Like, no, thank you.
So this wasn't planned. You were not dating this guy. It was...
Oh, we were dating. We were, like, a Tinder match. But we, like, knew each other. And then went on a few dates. It was super cool. And I was just like, hey, by the way, I'm a virgin. And he was like, oh, that's cool. And, like, he was just so lax about it. And, I think I just had him over for dinner and we made like mushroom risotto and then I was like, hey, do you want to have sex? And he's like, okay.
That is so straight up. That is, wow. I don't even know if, like,
I love it.
That's amazing.
Right? But he did say, he's like, so you're a virgin because he's like, why? And I was just like, I was very honest. I was like, I just never felt safe enough with a guy to have sex. And that was it. He's like, okay.
But it's crazy to me that like, consent, the idea of consent and communication is just, I'm not gonna say rare these days because I don't think it's rare, but that it's becoming harder to find someone who maybe understands it at the level you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I wonder, and it's just so weird just because we were talking about this, that if like guys who meet virgins, is it like So is it a big deal, and is that why they fantasize about it so much? And it's like, oh my god, you're a virgin, I want to take that virginity, you know? And it's so interesting.
It's honestly one or the other. They're either totally cool with it, they're weirded out by it, or they're like really into it.
In my situation, he was weirded out by it.
I think it was more not weirded out, maybe surprised.
No, I could tell you. It was weirded out more because I could instantly tell he was like, well, fuck, I still want to fuck her, but I could tell he was like freaked out by like the burden of pressure he thought was going to come with it. It's like, his bitch is going to catch feelings, which I did, but I'm not crazy. I'm not like, I'm going to like break into your house and make you pancakes when you're sleeping.
Yeah, it's not like that wouldn't really be that bad. Someone broke into my place to make me pancakes, I'd be like, hello.
Like, you're not gonna go into full wife mode.
Like, literally, what happened was the second, like, he divirginated me, and I even hate saying that word, whatever. The second we banged. And, by the way, this was, like, fully my decision, because I'm like, oh, this bitch is getting deported, because at the time we thought he was getting deported. So I'm like, I'ma fuck him.
I remember this convo.
Great, because I came into it, like, 100%, like, this is going down. I brought him, like, a vibrating cock ring so I could enjoy myself. Like, it was, like, on, and it was great. And then after that, it was, like, radio silence, and then I find out on the news that,
they're not getting deported?
Not getting deported.
And you're like, fuck.
I was like, fuck my fucking life. So, yeah.
Sorry so much.
Let's take it back to you, Demon. So, you know, now you've had sex. You're a bit more comfortable with your body. You're a bit more comfortable with dating. How did it translate into your current relationship? Did any of the struggles in the past kind of, like, seep through?
I think with the guy that I'm dating now, I realized I'm not good at communicating. Because he's very good at that. He's really, really, like, just on a mental level, super healthy, where, like, he will, you know, we'll spend the night together, and I'll say, like, okay, like, what do you feel comfortable with, or what are we doing? And I'm just like, why are you, like, you're asking me? Like, you know, whereas I think in the past, in terms of dating, it was like, oh, you got to play this, like, cool chick who, like, you know, just goes with the flow, and is just, like, down for whatever. Like, you can't admit that kind of stuff. I think in Toronto, everyone's just like closed off and just isn't really honest. But with him, it's been so surprising to just be so honest and so intimate about like our own fears and our own desires. It's scary because it makes you really vulnerable. And I think I've talked to this with Karam a lot, where I'm realizing when you find someone that you really, really connect with, it's a lot of work. I'm trying to let myself enjoy it. I think I kind of have, for a really long time, had this narrative in my head that I don't deserve to be in a fulfilling, happy relationship, which is something that I uncovered through therapy, that I've kind of had this, like, I'm not good enough story going.
Where does that stem from? Like, did you guys figure it through therapy, or is it something you're working on, but the basis of that?
I think it's definitely my upbringing was, I think, plays a huge role in that. I think growing up, I always put the needs of, like, my sister and my brother ahead of my own. I think my sister was just a much more dominant personality. Mm-hmm. And I think it's healthy that we're not talking right now. I'm happier. And I don't know what happened. We used to be really close. We used to be, like, best friends. And we moved to Toronto together. It's still painful to talk about because I still have a lot of love for my sister, but I don't think that she treats me very well, and it took me a really long time to realize that. When I was at my lowest, I think we worked because that was almost, it made her feel better about herself when I felt like crap. I don't know, our dynamic just changed. I don't even know how to talk about it.
Do you mind if I give my input from, like, seeing it for over the years?
Yeah, Karam has been my soundboard for all my issues with my sister, so I'd love to get your perspective. Because right now, I can't.
The craziest thing is our friendship formed because, so, we had a mutual friend in common, and Dee and I never hung out in person. But one day in December, we were out with this group of friends, and she had to leave to sleep over at her sister's house because her sister lived downtown. And so I went home, and she calls me, and we didn't really know each other, but she goes, I'm so sorry, but my sister locked me out of the house. Can I please stay over? And I didn't know her at the time, but I knew her as a friend of a friend, so I was like, yeah, sure. And so she came over, and then we just had this, like, crazy conversation revelation where we just, like, talked into the middle of the night, and we found so many commonalities, and we just really got to understand each other. And I think I have a understanding similar as you, but what I see from your relationships in the past few years is that when you weren't feeling good about yourself and you weren't getting the support you needed to be your best, the best version of yourself, mm-hmm. she was leaning on you a lot to get validation, to get that support, but it was more than you could give without hurting yourself. And I think the thing about, like, you always looking out for your siblings is you would give out all your love and energy and support to your detriment because you had to save some for yourself. Mm. And what I was seeing was that you were putting your needs aside to support them, but it was destroying you along the way, or it was just really harming you along the way. And over the years, the more self-actualized you became and the more independent you came and the more responsible you were of your own happiness, the more the cracks began to show because you couldn't give her that same level of attention that she needed mm-hmm. over the years. Correct me if I'm wrong, it was just something that I was seeing.
That was, you said it perfectly. I mean, I hate talking about it sometimes, but it's important to talk about, where I think now that my sister has seen me being more independent, she's also become more critical.
And do you think this is a cultural thing as well? Does it go back to the culture?
I mean, she was the firstborn. She was spoiled. I don't know if it's necessarily a cultural thing, because it's usually the boys that get away with a lot in my family. What do you think?
I really want to interject here, because your life is so fascinating, and obviously I'm in love with you. But, like, your situation is so interesting, because I feel like she almost feels a sense of ownership. Because, yes, she was the firstborn, but you told me when you were born, your parents actually sent you back to India because they couldn't take care of both you and your older sister, so they took care of her.
So basically, my parents were really young when they moved to Canada. My mom was 21, and I think she was 23 when she had me. And my parents were both working full-time, and they realized, okay, we can't afford a sitter, and we have two daughters. And at the same time, this is hilariously dramatic Brown story, but my dad's brother and his wife also couldn't conceive. And so they thought, hey, like, they have two girls. They don't need two girls, right? You have one girl. You want a boy.
One girl is fine.
Two girls are worthless. They were trying to adopt me, actually. And they would push these like adoption papers in front of my parents and say, like, you have two daughters, give us one since we can't conceive. And my parents were just like, fuck no, like, we love both of our daughters. And I think they just didn't want to deal with that situation. And also they were stressed out because they were working full time. And that they thought the solution at the time was, like, let's send Dhamma to India to live with our parents until we're more comfortable and we're more financially stable. My parents told me that was probably the worst decision they ever made, sending me away. But when I did come back, I think my parents tried to show my sister photos of me, but I don't think she completely understood that, like, hey, I have a sister. So when I did come back, there was this animosity between us where she was like, who the fuck is this kid? She would actually push me off of beds and stuff. So maybe it stems from that. Like, clearly in the beginning, she just, like, didn't like me, and she was just like, no.
Did that carry throughout?
No, it was always, I think it was just me also being really complacent growing up, right? Like, if she wanted to do something, I was like, okay, like, I'll just let you, like, run everything. And so I never really fought back. I never really stood up for myself. And I think once I started doing that as we got older, it wasn't okay with her. I mean, it's crept up in really strange ways. I think the last straw was when I got a new job in January. In my old position, I worked for a media company that my sister also used to work at. She basically would talk about it like, oh, I got you this job. So she thought that I owed her because she previously worked here. She was a reference for me. For those 2 years, it was like, you wouldn't be where you are now without me. That was kind of the narrative that she was spinning. Even though I worked very hard, and they wouldn't have kept me if I wasn't a good worker, right? But this was kind of like her saying, you owe me one forever. So when I eventually did leave that job because I was being underpaid and I was undervalued, I would talk to her about it. She would say that I was being greedy and that I didn't deserve what I thought I kind of, like, had worked up to, even though, you know, she doesn't live with me. She lives in the UK, but she would make these grand statements about my worth. And then so when I finally decided to leave. I applied for this other position with a tech company. I got the job. I got like a nice raise. She shit all over it. She told me I made a really big mistake. She said I would regret it. She said I was going to hate working for this company that she knew nothing about. And I think that was the point where I said, okay, my happiness is not important to you. And she actually made it about herself. She said, you know, you're making me look really bad by leaving this company because I was your reference. Like, and I was just like, how did you turn this into something about yourself? And she is a bit of a narcissist, I think, right? Everything comes back to her. So I think that was the moment where I was like super excited about this job, and my sister, because at the end of the day, her opinion still matters a lot to me. Like, in my heart of hearts, I still care a lot about her. She made me feel like garbage before I started this new job. I had a week off and I couldn't get out of bed. I was crying. I was insecure. And I realized, like, okay, this person is not healthy for me. Even if I do love her and care for her, she's really, really bad for me. I think after that, I decided to create distance, create boundaries.
Mm. I am struggling with an aunt of mine. For the longest time, I wanted to be like her, you know? And then when I moved out, I started to learn who I was. And so I started disagreeing with her. And she would say, Sinelli's changed. Sinelli's different. Because now I was not agreeable. So how do you, at that time, pull yourself out of that? Because that's fucking family. Because you know people are going to be like, Beta, that's your sister. You know, like...
That's what I heard my whole life, right? That's what I would talk about this with my mother, and she's like, but she's your sister, she loves you. She's your sister, she loves you. And I had to realize that, like, okay, this is a really toxic relationship. And I started noticing that when I would spend time with her, I would leave those experiences feeling like crap about myself, right? It was like realizing, like, okay, when I spend time with this person, how do I feel afterwards? Are they adding value to my life? And she wasn't. And it's really weird now because she got married. She's visiting in a few weeks with her husband, who my dad hasn't met yet. And I'm going to have to figure out how to navigate that. And I think talking to my therapist, talking to Karam and a few other friends is like, I'm going to just be really, really cordial with her and not overindulge my sister. And I feel like that's going to be my coping mechanism, because with brown families, like, you can never really cut off someone entirely. I'm deciding to be really selective about what I share with her. So I'm not going to talk about my job. I'm not going to talk about my personal dating life with my sister. She asks my mom about this stuff, by the way. She asks, I'm moving. She wants to know where I'm moving. She wants to know, like, who I'm dating, how my job's going. But I'm not going to indulge her in those details of my life.
Does your mom tell her or no?
My mom does, but she, again, it's just, like, general, right?
Do you have a strategy of how you're going to deal with this?
I need to talk about that with my therapist. That's our next session.
Because that's interesting, because when I go to meet this aunt of mine,
yeah,
I have to go over it with my partner. Because I need him to kind of pull me back and say, don't get caught up.
That's the thing, right? You have to be super, super selective about what you do say. And I think I realized with my sister, she loves talking about herself. So I'm going to let her talk about her life, her job, her husband, and just kind of listen. And definitely like spending time with her alongside my mom and dad and brother, they'll kind of act like buffers.
Yeah.
And that way, I think that's my best strategy right now. And I was really honest with my mom. I told, like, and she kind of understands now. I think she saw how heartbroken I was after the conversation about my job, and she saw how stressed out I was. And I was planning on going into this new job super happy and hopeful, and she completely destroyed my mood. And so I told my mom, I was like, I don't want you to push me on this. I will be cordial with my sister. I'll be nice, but that's it. Like, we're not buddy,
you know,
buddy.
At the same time, like you said, you know, that we're in brown families, we're not allowed to cut people off. But at the same time, they're so okay cutting people off. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we're so okay disowning someone because they don't go by, they don't follow the rules we have. Like, I have family where, you know, someone got married against in a different religion.
Yeah.
And her mother cut her off for like 10 years. Because it was a different religion. But we're so okay doing things like that because it's like we have this ego that takes over because we're so worried about what society will say and our culture. There's a saying in Hindi that lo kya kahenge,
yes,
which means what will people say.
But I feel like the motivations of cutting people off is different for each person because, like, I think from these family members that you're mentioning, it's a manipulation tactic because they're not expecting the person they cut off to be like, okay, I never want to see you again. I think they kind of expect it to be like, we are going to go so extreme with this and we expect you to come crawling back for forgiveness eventually. And I bet my left tit, which is my nicer tit, that if you went to that extreme and said, I'm going to cut you off completely, they're going to know that this isn't a manipulation tactic. You mean it. You mean it. And I don't think... I think they're starting to realize that they're not going to push you that far. At least from your mom's perspective.
It's almost like, do I want to go through the... I thought about... So I'm still figuring out whether or not I want to see her when she visits. I don't want to, but I don't think that's... I think that's going to create more problems than if I just kind of go into it and just play nice.
Yeah.
You know? But it's so hard. It's really, really hard. And I think I'm just realizing, like, I can't really... I've stopped caring about other people's expectations of me. I don't really care about what my extended family thinks or my cousins think. I'm just focusing on what actually makes me happy. That a lot of brown women don't do that.
I agree.
I think it's something we have to learn.
You have to fucking learn to, like, put yourself first, to protect yourself, to create, to give yourself that autonomy. It's really, really hard.
And what do you think? Why do you think that is? Why do you think that brown women have to go through this learning curve of putting themselves first?
I think it's more. It's a connected to self worth, right? So if you think your self worth is tied to your family's reputation, it's like you can't make a misstep.
Yeah, you carry the family's honor.
And I think growing up, it was always like me being compared to my cousins, me being compared to like all the other women in our family. And it's like, hey, look what Preeti's doing. She got married. She has like two kids. Like, you need to go on this trajectory as well.
But I think it's also fair to say that the way a woman is portrayed in a brown family and the actions she has have more consequences than a man's would. Because let's just say my brother Ed went and had a crazy party phase and had a lot of sex, that wouldn't be the same impact if I had a crazy party phase and started having a lot of sex with a lot of men. Totally different impact on the image of the family and everything else.
Oh, completely. Like, my brother, he's, like, 5 years younger than me, went out to parties, had sex at, like, 17, which is crazy. And my parents didn't really care because he's like, oh, they're a boy. He's a boy.
But, yeah, and I also think that... sorry, it's just, like, the family shit we're talking a lot about, so it's gonna be, like, so triggered. But it's just kind of, like, you and I, and I think a lot of people like us, have this inherent low self-worth and are working through that because it's very much tied to the status of women in brown culture and the multitude of expectations that are given to us compared to men. Not to say that men don't have expectations and difficulties and what they're supposed to do, but I think the consequences and the burden on women is that much larger.
The men don't carry the honor in the family, right? Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's and that's what I think is sometimes frustrating. I remember when my cousins would, you know, talk about girls at the age of 14 and 15 and we would sit around, you know, a dining table back home. And my mom would laugh. She'd be like, oh my God, you know. And listen, my mom's changed. She's learned a lot. She's understood a lot. But at that time, she would laugh at the fact that, oh my God, you know, this one's just running after anyone in a skirt. That's so funny. Almost like it was so cute. Oh, they're men. Men are wired to want to have sex. We're not wired to want to talk to the opposite sex or, you know, go on dates. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to get married. And it's just like, your relationship's not working because you're not controlling your man, you know? And it's almost basically saying, if you have sex with him, he'll listen to you.
It's purely like some bizarre energy exchange, I think, has happened. So like when you give it away, you lose power and he gains power. But then during the act or the lead up to the act, you have the power. Mm. So it's like your hymen is the philosopher's stone or some magical situation.
And I think it's, we're all late bloomers, right? It takes us so much, like, I think brown women just need more time to figure out, like, hey, this is what I actually want out of a relationship. Just because we're not really taught growing up to think about ourselves. And so it's just, you just gotta find the right person. I get, like, I love the idea of not feeling burdened by someone else's. Not saying that you don't care, but knowing that, like, okay, this isn't on me, right?
Like your traumas or your baggage or whatever.
Right.
What would you say to someone who's in a similar situation, or brown girls who are trying to figure themselves out and maybe feel like they're not good enough or feel trapped in a way with whether it's their own culture or their own expectations of themselves?
I actually think they should do a values exercise. Because I think that has been the most enlightening for me, is maybe just get a piece of paper and a pen and kind of split up the paper into sections, like your personal development, your relationships, and think about, like, okay, in my heart of hearts, what do I want in a relationship? What do I want to bring to the table? What do I, like, look for? What makes me happy? It's like basic questions like that that I don't think we're taught to think about, to really process and put on paper. And I think once I did that, I saw that it's so normal for us to kind of get wrapped up in our insecurities that we get pulled away from those values. And it was making that distinction that was really, really pivotal, I think, for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Dee. Didi auntie, you're such a good kid, Odie.
Thanks so much for coming, sharing your stories. Lots of insight, lots of honesty. Hey guys, thanks for listening. That's it for this week. We are signing out. Until next time, keep it real.